Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, May 28th, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Washington's law banning police use of projectiles and chemical irritants against peaceful protesters gets an early test in Seattle. Judge issues order in Idaho Attorney General's case of fired whistleblower. Hanford vitrification plant likely to start treating radioactive waste this summer, including high-level radioactive waste. And Moscow committee approves money for researching water diversion from the Clearwater River to augment declining aquifers on the Palouse. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, and live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. A new Seattle ordinance allowing police to use tear gas, pepper spray, and blast balls against protesters got a test Saturday in Cal Anderson Park, where the far right held a provocative anti-gay rally in a particularly pro-gay part of Seattle. A Spokane fundamentalist church organized the Don't Mess With Our Kids rally. The Capitol Hill blog news site reported hours into the rally, a phalanx of bicycle police moved in front of a large crowd of counter-protesters near the stage and suddenly advanced on the crowd using their bikes and batons as weapons. The new Seattle rule allows police to use tear gas, pepper spray, and blast balls in certain cases as long as the use is objectively reasonable, necessary, and proportional to a threat while minimizing harm to people who are exercising their free speech and assembly rights. In May 2021, then-Governor Jay Inslee signed a law restricting police use of tear gas unless necessary to prevent risk of harm from a riot, barricaded subject, or a hostage situation. Also in 2021, U.S. District Judge James Robart approved updates to the Seattle Police's crowd management policy as part of a 2012 U.S. Justice Department police brutality agreement called a consent decree. That came after a Justice Department investigation showed Seattle police used excessive force in 20% of arrests and frequently escalated situations. During the Black Lives Matter protests of 2020, after a Minneapolis officer murdered George Floyd, citizens and human rights activists criticized the Seattle Police Department's use of tear gas, pepper spray, foam-tipped projectiles, and other crowd-control weapons against the protesters. According to the Seattle Times, police made 23 arrests at Saturday's rally. Detective Eric Munoz said the use of pepper spray and long batons to push back a crowd appeared to be the only use of so-called less lethal weapons. On Saturday evening, Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell issued a statement blaming anarchists for infiltrating counter-protesters and therefore causing problems. Harrell wrote in a statement, "I am grateful for those who make their voices heard in support of our neighbors without resorting to violence. In the face of an extreme right-wing national effort to attack our trans and LGBTQ communities, Seattle will continue to stand unwavering in our embrace of diversity, love for our neighbors, and commitment to justice and fairness." Fourth District Judge Jonathan Medema in Boise has for a second time rejected a motion to excuse Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador from testifying in a whistleblower wrongful firing lawsuit. Labrador fired Deputy Attorney General Daphne Huang, who was assigned to Idaho Health and Welfare litigation. Huang alleged Labrador retaliated against her for raising ethical concerns related to her client's legal representation. Judge Medema wrote in a ruling Friday, "When neither party is providing the court with testimony from someone other than the Attorney General answering these questions, it is easy to conclude that the answers can only be provided by the Attorney General himself." Huang's attorney, Guy Hallen, told the Idaho Capital Sun the court again gave thoughtful consideration to the arguments made by Mr. Labrador and decided that Mr. Labrador must appear to give deposition testimony next week. Mr. Labrador is the one who took adverse actions against Ms. Huang and should have to answer questions about why he did so. We look forward to hearing what he has to say. The Attorney General's office has not commented on the situation this week. Previously, Idaho Attorney General Office spokesperson Damon Sidor said the office has maintained Huang's termination was based on legitimate work-related performance issues. The Hanford Nuclear Site's vitrification plant is nearly ready to begin treating Manhattan Project and Cold War-era waste that has been in underground storage tanks along the banks of the Columbia River for up to 81 years. More than 23 years after breaking ground at the site, the plant may soon begin processing prone-to-leaking liquid radioactive waste into stable glass-like logs for safe disposal. The process is expected to begin by adding ammonia and nitrous oxide-producing chemicals along with glass-forming materials to the nuclear waste. The mixture would be heated to 2,100 degrees Fahrenheit, poured into stainless steel containers, and then, after cooling into glass, stored in a lined landfill at Hanford. Workers are expected to filter off gases from the heating process through the plant's exhaust system. There are a few more obstacles before the site becomes operational. The ammonia distribution system must undergo one or more additional tests. Operators are still practicing the glass-making process using chemicals that simulate radioactive waste. Operators must prove the off-gas filtration system passes strict environmental guidelines. When those steps are complete, the plant will need to pass a Washington Department of Ecology and Environmental Performance demonstration and a United States Department of Energy Operational Readiness review. If all goes according to plan, the plant could be operational in July and have a full 4 feet wide, 7.5 foot tall canister of glassified waste by August. Once the site is operational, contractor Bechtel National will manage the plant for 6 to 18 months during the hot commissioning stage of the plant's life. Hot commissioning refers to the glassification of the most radioactive or hottest waste. As this stage comes to a close, Bechtel will transfer management of the Hanford vitrification plant to Hanford Tank Waste Operations and Closure, also known as H2C. H2C would continue operating the lower-level radioactive waste facility using 2 300-ton melters, the largest melters in the world, to begin the long process of glassifying 56 million gallons of radioactive waste.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by Palouse Prairie Charter School, an EL Education accredited expeditionary learning model school serving students in Northern Idaho. PPCS is a free public charter school that combines hands-on learning, rigorous academics, outdoor adventure, and character development. PalouseProairieSchool.org. Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Moscow Contemporary, which connects, supports, and creates community through art and arts education. Moscow Contemporary is located at 2012 West Pullman Road and moscowcontemporary.org.
In response to increasing federal threats to immigrant communities, including cuts to food assistance and deportations, a coalition of over 100 community organizations is urging Oregon's lawmakers to pass the 2025 Immigrant Justice Package. It includes five bills that would provide Oregon's immigrant families access to things like food and housing assistance, disaster relief, and legal representation. Oregon Worker Relief Coalition President Martha Sonato says the legislation will benefit all Oregonians.
What community has put forward is a package of very impactful cost-saving investments. These are all basic rights that really help families stay together and succeed.
Opponents to some of the measures argue it's unfair to ask legal residents to fund benefits for people in the country illegally. Supporters, however, counter that undocumented Oregonians contribute over $350 million annually in state and local taxes, making them deserving of these benefits. From the package, Sonato highlights a bill to create a farm worker disaster relief fund. She says Oregon farm workers, over 60% of which are immigrants, face lost wages due to extreme weather like heat waves and wildfires.
Farm worker disaster relief would really help make sure that farm workers are able to take care of themselves and their families, just like they're taking care of all of us.
Another bill in the package, Food for All Oregonians, would provide food benefits to all children in the state, regardless of their immigration status. The measures also seek funding to renew a legal aid program for immigrants, which Sonato says is crucial in today's climate.
This policy ensures that folks have due process by providing legal representation to immigrants that are seeking to adjust their status and facing deportation.
Sonato stresses that investments in immigrant communities now will save the state money in emergency food, housing, and medical resources down the road. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
The Moscow City Council's Administrative Committee yesterday recommended the city approve a task order with HDR Engineering to provide engineering and consulting services in an effort to determine whether diverting water from the Clearwater River is an appropriate water supply option for the Palouse. The city is collaborating with the Palouse Basin Aquifer Committee on the assessment, which Deputy City Administrator Tyler Palmer called a new and necessary step in finding a new water supply for the Palouse Basin to make up for declining aquifer levels under Moscow and Pullman. Here's Tyler Palmer.
We draw our water from an aquifer system. This aquifer system has been in decline since it was tapped in the late 1800s and continues to decline. The rate of decline is lower than it used to be, which is great, and we think largely attributable to conservation. We've seen very good response to our conservation efforts in the area, but it still continues to decline. And so we're mining the aquifer, and we need to stabilize this aquifer. There was an effort in 2016 that was conducted to identify all potential sources of water and then rank them according to potential feasibility. The initial project that was looked at was a project that was completely contained within the basin, a series of smaller projects within the basin. As we dug into the numbers on that project, it became apparent that that wasn't going to be a feasible project. The cost per acre foot was really high in the acre feet available, and when they were available just didn't make it realistic given the quantity of water that we needed. Our demand horizon is a 50-year demand horizon. And then it accounts for a 30% contingency for aquifer stabilization. So 30% of current use is about what we estimate we would need to stabilize the aquifer. And then there's the 50-year demand horizon that's built on top of that. So the next priority, the next prioritized project was what at the time was called Project Number One. It's a diversion from the Clearwater River. And so this would divert water from somewhere along the Clearwater River and pump it up into the Moscow Pullman area where it would be treated and then would either be used as direct potable use, pumped right into the system, or potentially as aquifer recharge, water going back into the aquifer, and then we keep our current withdrawal systems from the aquifer. This project takes the preliminary look at that.
Awesome.
And then that will be further explored, but included in this project, it takes a preliminary look at the geology, at the layers, where you might inject, what that might mean, what the cost estimation is between the direct potable use, what the legal considerations might need to be for taking water across the state line.
Gotcha.
And so this will take a preliminary look at that as part of this scope.
Sweet.
So HDR Engineering Services was selected. The scope of services was negotiated. The project total, $335,841. Of that, you may recall, we entered into an agreement in February with the Water Resource Board for $182,500. The Water Resource Board met here in Moscow last week, and they're really pleased with the progress on this. And we were able to express our appreciation for their continued support of our work here in the basin. At the Palouse Basin Aquifer Committee May meeting, they committed up to $187,000 for this project. And what that includes is the $153,000-ish that will be required to meet the total scope, and then an additional 10% contingency of the entire project cost. The project has four major components. The first is water supply assessment. And so that will be assessing the water availability, looking at seasonal, looking at long-term variation, looking at climate impacts. Is the water that we think going to be there going to be there, and can we get it? And then determining an optimal point of diversion. If you think about that river valley, there's actually pretty limited points of diversion. There's a lot of diversions on that river between the city of Lewiston, Lewiston Orchards Irrigation District, but it's pretty narrow, and the highway's right there. And so that is certainly a consideration. And then, as I mentioned, assessed impacts of climate variation, weather supply, weather condition on supply. We have to look at things like we're starting to see less snowpack, and the snowpack that we do see is coming down quicker, and we're starting to see, you know, a trend toward more rain. And so we've got about the same amount of precipitation, but it's coming differently in recent years. And so taking a look at those and then having the prognostication to say what might that impact be if those trends continue.
That was Deputy Moscow City Administrator Tyler Palmer speaking to the City Council's Administrative Committee yesterday. Palmer said the assessment should take about 12 months to complete. The Moscow City Council's Administrative Committee recommended approval and put the item on the regular agenda for next Monday's City Council meeting.
The National Park Service faces at least two lawsuits for its latest bison management plan for Yellowstone National Park, the first update released in about 25 years. The new plan allows for a slightly larger bison population in the park, between 3,500 and 6,000 animals, as well as more space for them to roam and increased capacity for people to hunt them. The state of Montana is suing, alleging a lack of cooperation in planning. And the conservation group Alliance for the Wild Rockies is also suing because, as Executive Director Mike Garrity says, the plan's environmental impact statement doesn't follow the most current science.
We want the Park Service to do a new EIS that is honest, and then we could have an intelligent discussion and debate about wild bison.
The plan aims to prevent the spread of brucellosis, a bacterial disease that can lower birth rates in cattle, a priority for local ranchers. But a report from the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine shows all recent cases of the disease in cattle were transmitted by wild elk, not bison. The Park Service plan received some praise for incorporating the Bison Conservation Transfer Program, which relocates some healthy animals to tribal nations across the U.S. But Garrity says the plan needs work around hunting protocols, which lead to intensive hunting in one gulch that acts as a migration bottleneck.
Hunters are just lining up, and it's become a shooting gallery. You know, it's not a fair chase hunt.
Both the Alliance lawsuit and the state's will be heard in Montana's Billings Division U.S. District Court. I'm Kathleen Shannon with Big Sky Connection.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, mostly clear tonight, low 55. 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. tomorrow, then a slight chance of showers, otherwise mostly sunny, high 76. Mostly clear Thursday night, low 47. West winds 10 to 15, becoming light after midnight. Gusts up to 25. And sunny Friday and Saturday, highs 79 Friday, 86 on Saturday. Mostly clear Friday night, low 52. Partly cloudy Saturday night, low 50 and breezy. Mostly sunny on Sunday, high 68. Currently 83 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. On the KRFP.org website, there's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. There you can adopt a DJ, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can also underwrite programming, and you can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. David Katz assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman Community Radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online. Flashpoints is coming up in the 6:30 to 7:30. And back to live versions of Lockdown Mosh Pit after a sabbatical, 7:30 to 8:30 tonight here on KRFP. That'll be followed by Music in Earnest with Grateful Dead Through the Decades with Arlene at 8:30 to 11, and Sounds of the Future on Live in the Studio 10 to 11 p.m. tonight. So stay tuned for all of that.
Love's Kombucha is proud to support KRFP, Radio Free Moscow. Love's Kombucha is a fun, lively, fermented probiotic tea that is craft brewed right here in Moscow. Available online at loveskombucha.com.
For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to krfp.org and click Support KRFP.